We welcome you to hour number two of the program. I'm John Wilkerson. Vince Ferrara pinch hitting for Jimmy Hyams. And this is the hour that we set aside each week for Vince's views. We've got lots to talk about in regards to Tennessee football, Tennessee basketball, Tennessee baseball, the National Football League, and so much more. We also very much invite your phone calls. In fact, why don't we go straight to the phones as Brian leads us off. He joins us now. Brian, how are you?
Good. How are you guys?
Doing fine. Thanks for hanging with us.
Hey, I wanted to ask you all about the NFL, specifically the NFC this weekend and the wild card games. I wanted to see what your all's opinion was about which, for the 49ers, the Cardinals, and the Eagles, which one of those quarterbacks would be replaced first? Garoppolo looked pretty good this weekend, but Hurts struggled. Kyler Murray looked terrible. I just wanted to know what you all thought about who would be replaced first. Obviously, with Trey Lance at 49ers, I think Garoppolo kind of fighting for that spot. But Murray and Hurts really struggled. And I will hang up and listen to your comments.
All right. Sure do appreciate it, Brian. That's an excellent question. I do wonder that Hurts could be the one that's in the most tenuous position. And that's just because you have to wonder whether or not the Eagles believe he's their quarterback of the future. I think he has played well enough to be the quarterback for the time being. And I think he should get more time to solidify his spot, because I thought after the way the season started, the Eagles had no shot. But I also would give a first-year head coach credit for realizing what the strength of his team was, and that was to push the ground game as much as anything. And that softened up defenses for what they were able to do through the air. When you look at what Hurts did for the season in terms of his passing yardage, his rushing yardage, I think he showed that he's capable, a very capable starting quarterback in the National Football League. But I also know that's his first playoff start, and he did not play well. But Tampa had something to do with that. I do wonder about some of his decision-making. That interception at the goal line, I think, late in the second quarter was just crippling to that was probably their last best chance to get in the game after Tampa had separated early on.
Well, with Jalen Hurts, you're right in everything you said, that I think he has warranted a little bit more time. But there are things that are concerning long term. Like, he waits until his receivers are open before cutting it loose. Does a lot of the hitching and holding on to the ball. Sometimes he's more accurate when he's out of the pocket than in the pocket. And long-term in the NFL, you just can't survive that way. I actually think that some of that and trying to prove as a pocket quarterback has taken away from Kyler Murray.
Yeah.
I think Kyler Murray stays in the pocket too much. Hurts is, I think we'll get another opportunity. Kyler Murray's not going anywhere, so it's not him.
Top pick in the draft, that's who they want to be their quarterback.
My answer to Brian's question would be Jimmy Garoppolo, because the 49ers seemingly have already made that decision.
True.
Regardless of how Jimmy G is playing. And overall, he's played well, except for that late game decision. And then also that offside penalty on that fourth down and not waiting for Trent Williams to get down and set. He's got to be aware in that spot.
Yeah, he is the one that calls the snap.
Right.
So that's... I certainly agree. But I do think that if you go by just answering his question, which of the quarterbacks will likely take a snap elsewhere first out of the group we saw play this weekend, could very well be Jimmy Garoppolo.
That's my answer, because it seems like they're going to go with Trey Lance. So we'll see. You know, if Jimmy G leads him to a Super Bowl, how are you taking his gig away?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you try to delay it for a year and let him wait till he implodes before you do it. But, man, I think that's the way it'll go, that Jimmy G is the guy. And, you know, he's right. Murray was awful last night.
Sure was.
And and really didn't play great down the stretch. I had him as my fantasy quarterback. So his numbers went downhill as the year went on. Thankfully, I had Tom Brady to slide in as my backup.
Yeah.
What life is that?
And wearing the hat and carrying the clipboard for the first two-thirds of the season.
just like TB12 is known for.
Had him right there behind the glass. Break in case of emergency.
Right, exactly. Kyler Murray, he's in that same Cardinals mode where he kind of tapers off and his numbers drop off dramatically. So, yes, long-term, still he's got stuff to prove. And but I think Jimmy G, to answer the question, is the guy that would likely be elsewhere.
He was asking specifically about the NFC quarterbacks. What do you think in terms of the AFC? Do you think for the teams that came up short this past weekend, the fact that Mike Mayock is out with Las Vegas? I was a little surprised at that, simply for the fact that while you had a lot of turnover that you didn't plan on going into the season with John Gruden, I thought, hey, they won 10 games. This is just the Raiders' second winning season in the last 18.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was really surprised that a third year into it, and considering, one, the adversity they dealt with off the field, I mean, you have the rug situation, just horrible, and then you also have a defensive back that you cut from the team because essentially he's
making threats.
Yeah, not all there. And so he just paved his own way out. So, and then you also have injury just like so many other teams have dealt with. I would have thought that you would have seen enough to say that's a pretty good group that they've assembled. I mean, for that group to stick together through all of that and then come up not only with a winning record, but they were right there with a chance to win on Saturday. I was surprised that they went ahead and pulled it out from under Mayock.
Well, first of all, it's the Raiders.
Fair point.
So they don't, you know, they don't go by what everybody else thinks they should do.
Right. Could be what the guy in the lounge said over the weekend at P.F. Chang.
That's right. That's right. In a jumpsuit.
That's right. And that's not a slight on P.F. Chang's. That's just where the owner spends a lot of his time.
That's right.
Hey. You find your spot. You find yourself a spot you enjoy. There's absolutely no reason not to go there as much as you want.
I think that's a quality spot, but I think this is an indication that they're going to hire a new head coach and not give Rich Bisaccia that full time gig. So I think also in getting away from the whole John Gruden thing, you know, Rich Bisaccia was a Gruden guy. He's followed him around at so many different spots. So even though he did an unbelievable job, I think Mayock did a pretty good job as well. They had some misses in the draft, and I think he was about one game over 500, something like that, in his 3 years. I think they are setting up, will not surprise me. There's a GM candidate from Cleveland that has a great relationship with Jim Harbaugh. So I think they're setting the table up to try to get the GM to get Harbaugh and make a splash in Las Vegas.
Do you think anybody will talk to Rich Bisaccia that's now got an opening? That I thought that he did a wonderful job. And he's somebody who he's had some really noteworthy people in his corner for some time and saying this is somebody who needs and deserves a shot at being a head coach in the NFL.
I do think that he will get looks. Now, how long do the Raiders drag this out to where he has an opportunity?
That's a fair point.
Hopefully if they're not going to keep him, they just let him go rather than what I think the Raiders, I said this before, what I think the Raiders are going to do is they're going to wait till they find their guy and then have him there knowing that he would stay and be the head coach and have him be their fallback if they can't land that guy.
That's really tough to do somebody like that. But yeah, I don't doubt for a second the scenario that you paint.
Right.
So I do think in all likelihood, they're going to swing for the fences. And if the Raiders don't get the man they want, which I do believe is Jim Harbaugh, top target, do you think he'll go? I'd be surprised if he left after last year. But then again, last year might be the perfect time to ride off into a different opportunity because you would leave with a championship and a trip to the college football playoff. Not a long stay, but you did make it. You did everything you were supposed to do much earlier than now, and that's beat Ohio State and win the Big Ten title.
The people that are closest to Harbaugh, it sounds like he was not happy about taking a pay cut last year, and he's going to try to make them sweat and get some of that money back, if not all of it. And having this year, they beat Ohio State and get to the playoff, be desired by the NFL. Now you got to pay up to keep him. I don't think he wants to. Maybe the NFL is something that he down the road wants to do. I think he's leveraging Michigan to try to get paid, and maybe down the road he will make that jump and using the NFL in his favor.
all of that Raiders conversation, notwithstanding the point that I was getting to, I do wonder if they will go in a different direction than Derek Carr. I think he might be a playoff quarterback who takes his next snap elsewhere.
I agree. With Mayock gone, if they don't keep Bisaccia, yeah, I think you could very well see Derek Carr elsewhere. And Derek Carr would be, he wouldn't be at the top of the most desirable list, but he'd be on a short list and in one hand, mm-hmm. if you're going through guys that are potentially out there. I mean, the Aaron Rodgers and the Russell Wilsons and, you know, those kind of guys, he's not too far behind there.
That's Vince Ferrara. I'm John Wilkerson. We'll get a break. We've got a lot more coming your way. To join us, 865-656-9900. That's 865-656-9900. And just this thought, because Carr by no means is the only quarterback who does this, but he's very generous in terms of his willingness to help officials. When the Raiders have the ball, he does a great job of lending a helping hand. If they need what he saw on the previous play, he's always great to volunteer what he saw. And again, there are more that do it than don't, and there are others who no longer play that were also very generous in terms of. I know that there was somebody who was talking on last night's Manning cast that was very generous in terms of either signaling where the penalty should have been or what the penalty should have been, and perhaps arguing if indeed that was not the call. But I just, isn't it amazing that they are so generous in pointing out what were the shortcomings of the defense, and yet that generosity does not apply when it's against their own unit? I mean, wouldn't you think that, hey, I know you might think it was offsides on them, but the left tackle moved. I mean, I just think that, wow, it's amazing how they always point to the other side, but their guys never commit a penalty.
It's about vantage point, John. You just don't always have the best view to help the officials.
That's a fair point. That's well said. Yeah. Wouldn't it be great just once? Hey, I'm sorry, but that was on us. Kind of like in tennis when you don't have an umpire or judge on hand.
Right.
You just, okay. Yeah. You're on your honor.
I think individual sport, you may be able to get away with that. When you have 10 other guys on the field with you at the same time telling you to shut up, what are you doing? That's, then you have to answer to them.
That's right. No, I insist. It was OPI.
Yeah.
Don't see that happening anytime soon. John Wilkerson, Vince Ferrara, pinch hitting for Jimmy Hyams. And why don't we go to the phones and check in with Steve? You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Steve.
Hey, fellas.
Hey.
Oh, this... I want to ask when this portal stuff. Are all these players being given money that sign? Not the portal stuff, the money stuff with the signees. I mean, is it a matter of some kid being told you come here and you'll make so much money more than you would somewhere else? I mean, what's the deal exactly? I don't really understand how it's all going.
Well, if it works the way it's supposed to, the university is not allowed to line up things for either current or future players.
Right.
But we know that in some instances that it has been. I mean, Brigham Young has talked about deals that it's put in place for some of its players. That's not supposed to happen, so that would be against the rules as they are established. Vince, I guess it would be... I think I saw a note about Miami that you now have a booster has put together kind of a collection of other boosters that have set aside like $10 million in terms of NIL money that's going to go to Hurricane players.
Right.
So I don't know that it's a one-for-one, that the moment you sign with a school, some schools that you automatically get deals, but, I mean, you have some states that it's now legal for high school players to do name, image, likeness stuff. And so there are, I still think it's probably on a case by case basis, but, and I would not say that, again, I would say that there are more schools where you sign and don't get something immediately as opposed to those that you do and you have something waiting for you.
Yeah. I don't think it's immediate. I think it's indirect, but I'm sure these schools are using it to try to lure kids and say,
yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, here's what you're going to get, so come to our school.
Here are what players on this team have been able to line up. And,
right.
And I guess as we heard with Alabama, I mean, their quarterback, I think, signed $1.4 million, or he had deals totaling $1.4 million with all the things that Young was connected to.
And you can, and I'm sure Alabama is using that to try to to leverage kids, but not everybody's going to get that kind of money. So you're going to show what the potential is, but then the kids aren't going to get that kind of money, because I think those instances are still few and far between. But yes, Steve, it is absolutely being used as leverage. And because there's not, other than the schools setting it up for the kids, that rule, the NCAA just doesn't have a hold of this. And that's been the problem. So it's a little bit of a free-for-all in how schools are going about doing it, and how indirect you can help kids at your school, and do it in ways that technically aren't illegal at the time, but you're setting it up anyway because there's not any sort of national guidance or national rules in terms of those things. So yeah, so I've heard some Tennessee fans complain that, you know, Tennessee doesn't have enough going on for their student athletes. I don't know if that's the case compared to other schools, but I know some are saying, hey, we're clearly not using NIL to our advantage. So there's some frustration with fans, and maybe they're not getting some of those big deals that some other schools are.
Right. Okay, I got to ask this question again. I know I've asked it a bunch of times, so I keep hearing different stuff. How many more do y'all think we end up taking in the portal? How many will we have combined or signees in the portal, do y'all think, if we can, when it's all said and done?
Well, they've lost 7 in the transfer portal. So right. Tyon Evans just before the season ended, and then 6 since then. So they can max out at 7 more in the transfer portal above the 25 for the signing day, the 2 signing days. They signed 20 in the early signing period, so technically they could use 5 more if they brought in high school kids or JUCOs.
Right.
They could also use those for transfers. So I'd say 2 of those transfer spots are already taken with players coming in. Commitment, Isaiah Nair, and then Gerald Mincy from Florida.
Mm-hmm.
So you're down to 5 more transfers. So a total of 10, with 5 being transfers and then the other 5 either being transfers or high school players. If that combined, you're going to have 10.
Right. Okay, then. I keep hearing all this stuff about how many scholarships we might knock off, and, you know, say, oh, we're knocking off scholarships.
Yeah, I mean, and that's another thing. That's another part of the equation, and that's legitimate. Is Tennessee going to offer any of its remaining scholarships to the NCAA in terms of part of its self-imposed penalty?
Right. And Steve, there's no guarantee that if Tennessee, say, does have 10 spots available, they're going to use them all.
Right.
They don't have to.
Right. Well, okay. Well, y'all hang in there, guys. I'm still loving this portal stuff. I know that's crazy, but I do. I can't help it.
Well, it's something that you're still learning about every day.
Right.
So I can understand the appeal.
Right. One thing I like about it, in the way it seems to me right now, most of these kids get in a portal. They may not have been the best player at their school, of course, but most of them have had some experience, and they've basically showed to some degree that they're capable of being good players, maybe real good. And that's the thing I like about it the most. Besides all the fascination of hearing about new people, pretty regular. Like you say, it's every day something about it. But
Steve, it's
type of stuff.
The transfer portal.
Don't hang in there, guys. Right. Nice weather we're having outside down here. I'm sure y'all's weather is nice, too.
Very nice as well, and here's hoping it holds. But, Steve, always appreciate it. You were going to say, Vince?
Yeah, it's a mixed bag. You know, yes, you get players with experience, but it doesn't always work out for those kids
that
go to their new schools. So Tennessee brought in, I don't know, 11, 12, and I'd say they had 3-ish impact transfers. So sometimes it seems like, all right, this guy can really help us, and then it doesn't play out for whatever reason.
You're talking about from this year's group of those that joined the program or over the last couple?
No, just going into last year. Tennessee lost a bunch, but then they brought in, you know, 10 or 11, whatever it was. And I'd say, you know, three or four were impact guys that were transfers. So not everybody, even with their experience and getting a fresh start or being closer to home, doesn't always work out for those guys. And I know just recruiting high school players, there's no guarantee that those work out either. Mm-hmm. But it is a mixed bag, even if it sounds positive at the time when you're tracking it and say, all right, this guy can really help us. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't.
Our pal Ben Fredrickson, formerly of Knoxville, now in St. Louis Post-Dispatch. He says, he tweeted actually a little more than a half hour ago, remember, folks, every transfer your college football team lost is overrated, and everyone coming in is the real deal.
Yeah, absolutely. So spot on.
This hour brought to you by Waters Equipment. Outstanding in what they do for their clientele and their customers, as they have been for quite some time, and can't say thank you enough to this fantastic organization. For fantastic organization, Vince, for what they also support with our group of stations, especially your hour each Tuesday, as well as high school football and many other things that we would not be able to do if not for their generous support.
Yeah, UT Athletics, including Tennessee baseball. And so really appreciate Waters Equipment, 48 years in the area, doing great business. And a lot of people that have heard me talk about them here on this weekly hour on Sports Talk have gone back to him, mentioned it to him, and just heard me on the radio in general, and become customers. So thank you so much to everybody that's listened, first of all, and then also supported them, because supporting our sponsors is a big way, a big reason why this all moves circular and continues to get done.
One of the things that that you've noted, Vince, is we've been talking about where Tennessee's roster stands and the fact that a number of Vols took a little while, but you have seen those that have made the decision to go elsewhere, and some just now announcing their choice as to where they will suit up next. Harrison Bailey, if you didn't hear the news, is going to UNLV. Also, we saw a recent entry into the transfer portal wind up at Eastern Kentucky. So it's, you see some of these guys landing or finding out where they're going to land for their next opportunity and where they will take their next snap. But with this 21 signing class that was once 17, it's now down to 11.
Yeah, and that 21 class obviously was the first one that was brought in and put together by Josh Heupel. So, you know, you scroll through it. They're not a ton of guys that got a whole lot of playing time. Byron Young did, Jalen Wright did, and that's about it out of the 11. So not only do you have just 11, you have 11 that with not a whole lot of snaps and playing time amongst them.
True. That was the first class that signed with Josh Heupel as coach, but that was work that had been done primarily from the previous staff.
Correct.
Because they just didn't have much time in position to have a great impact on that particular group.
Definitely. And he came in late. So yes, that's true. But you know, it's still that first year still is something you need to bridge when you're trying to make up ground. So, and Walker Merrill will be another one that got some playing time, but not a ton. So, you know, you lost your quarterback from that class and Caden Salter, and that was his own doing. And, you know, Tyon Evans was Tennessee's best running back at one point during the year. Had a tough time staying healthy, and he moved on. So it's an interesting group that has taken off and moved on. And you know, there was transfers as well. It's not just the signing class, and I think they still feel good about some of those other guys in that 2021 class. But man, just when you're trying to make up numbers, you're trying to stay at the 85 number. Having those departures, it can certainly hurt, because you don't want to just rely on plugging holes with the transfer portal. They're allowed this year to go max of seven above the 25 signing limit for transfers if you lose up to seven in the transfer portal. And Tennessee has the ability to do that because they've reached that point. And they've had six guys leave since the season ended, and running back Dee Beckwith and long snapper Will Albright, wide receiver Anderson Kobe, offensive tackle Kayron Calbert, who I think is who you refer to going to Eastern Kentucky, and Kamen Marley, who was getting a look on defense in the bowl practices at either DB or linebacker, and then Trinity Bell, who was at tight end, but he was hurt, and then I think there was a plan for him maybe at defensive end, but and then you had Tyon Evans leave just before the end of the regular season. They also had six guys leave either in the summer or before the season. So, you know, and that includes Evans and, you know, the quarterbacks and things like that. So there has still been some attrition under Josh Heupel. I think it's natural that you're going to have some guys just not fit or want to move on to, you know, to a different scheme or more playing time, all those kind of things. And, you know, even though Tennessee doesn't have the largest group of guys that have moved on, you still have some notable players that have left this team, either moving on to the NFL or just out of eligibility. So I think getting not just numbers in terms of the transfer portal, but quality and having those guys pan out, because the numbers still are an issue right now for Tennessee, I think they're going to need a greater hit percentage, and they're going to need some of these 2022 freshmen to play a role as well.
I think so. I think very much that's the case. Let's check in with Doug. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Doug.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
You were talking about Harbaugh and the University of Michigan. Michigan has bigger problems than Harbaugh now. I don't know if you saw, they fired their president Sunday.
Oh, yes, I did hear about the change at the very top.
Yes, he was sending inappropriate messages through his university email account and violated the system that he devised.
Wow.
And this guy was an MD.
Holy moly.
But I would think that puts Harbaugh in a pretty good negotiating position right now, don't you?
Well, it's another chip that's in his favor.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I didn't know. I sent you the article. I didn't know if y'all had seen it or not, but I just wanted to pass that on.
No, I do appreciate it. Have not had a chance to look at what you sent. Always appreciate the correspondence, Doug.
And how often has that guy told other people, whether it's football coaches or anyone else, you're held to a higher standard?
That's right. You're a Michigan man.
Oh, yes. Yeah. It said it was inconsistent with standards of the University of Michigan.
Wow. Goodness.
See you guys.
All right. Sure do appreciate it, Doug. We'll get a break. We've got a final segment to this hour of Sports Talk, as Vince, of course, with me the entire afternoon. But one more segment to this hour is brought to you by Waters Equipment. And again, this hour brought to you by Waters Equipment. I'm John Wilkerson with Vince Ferrara. And we invite you to join us with a question or comment in Under the Wire, 865-656-9900. And Vince, of course, if folks aren't already making it a part of their daily routine, you can always find something compelling at 991thesportsanimal.com.
That's right. Whether it's blogs from either Jimmy Himes or myself, 6-0 in my Super Wild Card Weekend NFL prediction. So happy with that. More so that I got scoreboard over Jimmy Himes, in that the Arizona Rams game went my way in the picks. That was the one game we differed on this weekend. Anytime you can get scoreboard over Jimmy, you take it and you cherish it. Those are hard to come by. So I put up blogs. I have my season record, both straight up and against the spread. I did against the spread this year. So you can see all that stuff with predictions and great game notes, too, that I get from the league, that you can really learn about a lot of those games on that blog. And then obviously the podcast in the audio section. Also, there's a feed in the show section as well on our website, and so much other, whether it's national or locals, tons of Tennessee Volunteers content there. Everything on UT and videos, tons of stuff. The recent renovation video update that UT released, there's that in the video section of our website. You can see all the construction at Neyland Stadium and some photos and everything else. So there's tons of content on a daily basis. 991thesportsanimal.com.
And also, have you decided who you're taking in what we go from the Super Wild Card weekend to now, four games in the divisional round? Who do you like in terms of two games Saturday, two games Sunday?
I am. I have decided, and typically you like the home teams, but I don't think it often works out that way to where the home teams sweep out. Basically, it was decided for me before the season. I was on the NFL report with you, John, and I said my Super Bowl pick was Green Bay and Buffalo. So before the playoffs started, I said, I'm just sticking with it. It's close enough.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sticking with it. And obviously, Buffalo looked amazing last week. Can they duplicate it? We'll see. And then Green Bay had the open week. So I'm sticking with that. And if Buffalo is my Super Bowl team and they look that good, I'm picking them to win. And they're my road team. I'm taking the three home teams, and I'm taking Buffalo to win at Kansas City.
Very nice. And Buffalo's already got a win under its belt in Arrowhead.
Yep.
Now, looks like Buffalo has gotten back to that level of play with how strong it was in finishing the season the way it did and the way it beat the Patriots in their last two meetings, one in Foxborough, and then what we saw this past weekend was really impressive. And then on the other hand, Kansas City, different animal. They were struggling a bit at that point in time. Defense was really a bit of a liability, but they looked just exactly like you expected them to look against Pittsburgh. Took a little while for the offense to get going, but boy, once it got going, I believe that that Patrick Mahomes' 5 touchdown passes came in a little more than 10 minutes of actual game time.
Yes, because their first touchdown was with under 6 minutes left in the second quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And they got another one with like a minute and change to go, and then another one in the final seconds. And then the first 5 or 6 minutes of the third quarter. So absolutely. You're right. Kansas City is much improved from what we saw from them, and they're putting up points like Buffalo. Pretty much every game, they're getting 28, 30, 40, and they've been doing that for a while. In fact, their only loss since October was to the Cincinnati Bengals in Week 17.
Yeah, and now they had a 2-touchdown advantage on 3 different occasions and couldn't make it stand up, but their defense looked just fine against Pittsburgh on Sunday night, and we'll see how it goes. Also wonder about the weather and what we might have. Now, both teams will be well-suited because both teams are used to playing in miserable conditions from one time to the next. So I don't think that'll be a great factor in which team. It's just who plays the best regardless, and that's Kansas City or Buffalo. I think Buffalo could be a very strong pick to come out of that game.
And if Buffalo wins that game, and if Buffalo wins that game, if Cincinnati wins, Buffalo hosts an AFC championship game. If the Titans win, Bills fans, you can go to Nashville and see Buffalo at the Tennessee Titans. Oh, by the way, play it on Monday Night Football in a game that went down to the wire. That was a lot of fun.
That's right. Stop at the goal line or stop inside the 5 by the Titans at the end to seal the win. In fact, out of the matchups that we have in this divisional round, only Tennessee and Cincinnati is the game that hasn't taken place already this year.
Right.
The Rams were the first team to knock off the defending world champs in Tampa Bay. That game took place in L.A. This time they'll play in Tampa. You had the 49ers fall to, by just a couple of points, early in the season to Green Bay, as the Packers, who they're just fine in the regular season, but they were able to exercise a recent demon in the 49ers. And then you also have, as we were talking about, it was a very decided performance for the Buffalo Bills in a primetime game, knocking off the Kansas City Chiefs. So we will see exactly how round 2 goes for these teams. And that's the other thing that's kind of cool, as we did have some divisional matchups where it was round 3, like the Bills and the Patriots. These are all round 2.
Right.
So second round, second matchup, we'll see whether or not it favors the team that won the first go-around or the team that came up short.
And that round 1 between the Bengals and the Titans, pretty compelling as well.
Yeah.
And watching some video on social media of Derrick Henry at practice today, I think he's going to play.
Yeah.
I mean, there was defensive linemen just bouncing off of him, and he's just doing individual drills. He was going pretty hard today. I would expect to see him, and that's obviously a great thing for the Titans.
Sure is, and we look forward to talking to Mike Keith about that tomorrow. But what we'll do is get a break. When we return, hour number 3 of Sports Talk is next, and we'll start with comments from Vols head coach Josh Heupel as you listen to 99.1, the Sports Animal.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit. and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL Fan Festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.